Welcome to The Common Sense Show with your host, Dave Hodges. We discuss a variety of topics here, including the deep state, the New World Order, Agenda 21. There is no one, no topic beyond Dave's reach, because as you know, you can't dodge the Hodge.
Hi, everybody. This is Dave Hodges. I'm the host of The Common Sense Show, and we are the show that is freeing America one enslaved mind at a time. Listen, I got to tell you guys, this freeing America one enslaved mind at a time, we need to multiply that, which means you got to get off the couch if you haven't already, and you got to assist, and you need to take shows, programs, articles of people that you respect, think they make sense, and you need to share. We got 50% of the country out there that's dumber than a box of rocks, and they're going to decide the next election. Maybe only 20% of them vote, but that could be the swing vote. And if all they're hearing is CNN, then you know how that's going to go. So that's why I'm asking for your help in sharing these broadcasts far and wide. Well, we have an exciting hour. It's a distressing hour because we're going to be talking about the coming famines and the food inflation and all the problems, the attack on our food supply. And it's here. And to cue us in on all this is Alexander Daly. He should be with us in just a minute. But first, I need to tell you that there are some people that make this show possible. And I want to start with the good people with Noble Gold. They have an IRA that you really need to get into. I'm looking at charts and data that show me that some of these people are making triple-digit profits. It's absolutely fantastic. And they're doing it through the IRA. It's a gold-backed IRA. It's not subject to currency manipulation like the dollar is. And this is really the way to go. You owe it to yourself to check it out. It's also a great hedge against inflation, and it can shore up your pension. Now, how do you get a hold of Noble Gold? Well, you can give them a call. 877-646-5347, 877-646-5347. I got to tell you this, too. You'll get a discount if you mention my name, Dave Hodges. Let them know you heard it right here. And the website you can go to is noblegoldinvestments.com. And I'll have that link in the description box following this broadcast. We're also brought to you by preparewithdave.com. It's kind of ironic we'd have that sponsor with the show, but I would start storing food. Now I'm getting more myself, but I would start storing food immediately. After you hear this report from Alexandra, you're going to say, hey, I need to stock up on food. Even FEMA, even DHS says you need 6 months. I think you need a lot more than that, but that's a good start. Go to preparewithdave.com, 70% off right now. Restaurant quality, 25-year shelf life. Preparewithdave.com. Well, Alexandra has been a guest on our show before, and when we've aired her material, YouTube wasted no time in coming in and demonetizing. So you know when you're getting flack, you're over the target. And we're going to really be over the target on this particular broadcast. Alexandra, welcome to the show. I'm glad you could join us because this is a critical, critical topic.
Well, thank you very much, Dave. It's really great to be back and always an honor to talk to you. This is kind of an overwhelming topic. You talk about it a lot, about preparing, and we all need to. And after kind of going through this, hopefully I'll be able to paint a really good picture, because a lot of times when we're looking at this, we'll go back a couple of years. If anybody, you know, we've been talking about it. You go into a grocery store, you start seeing things dwindle. You've heard about Venezuela, you hear things. And it's not really tangible. So what I'm hoping to do tonight is get everybody to see the full picture, because they're literally throwing the kitchen sink at us.
They sure are.
So, you know, to say that you really need to prepare, you really need to prepare. No matter where you stand on it, whether it's man-made weather, whether it's just the weather, whether it's, you know, let's talk about what the bottom line really is, because this is what we're facing. Not so much how we got here, this is what we're facing. So most of you, your listeners, and I know you know that basically because of the weather and the storms and everything, especially going on, the flooding, going on in the Midwest, we're facing the worst agricultural disaster in modern history. And the National Weather Service alone has been talking about a lot more flooding throughout the middle portion of the nation over the next 2 months. Well, some of the stuff they're not talking about are the millions of bushels of wheat and corn and soybeans that are being destroyed. And there are thousands of farmers that won't be able to plant at all this year.
Is that because of the flooding? So, is that because the farms are...
The repercussions of that, not only of what was wiped out this year, but what for next year.
Okay, Alexander, let me share this with you. I've had emails from farmers that tell me they can't plant because their land is under the Mississippi River. Is that what you're referring
to?
Yeah.
Absolutely. And it's even when it's starting to recede, there are other issues under the land, which is trying to get it dried out. There's chances of mold, there's chances of rot, there's enumerated things. And then, of course, now they're going to get hit with more sets of storms, which means more flooding. So think about it, people. We're going to be running out of crops probably by the end of this year, and if they're not able to plant, there's not going to be anything next year. So, you know, and then they've got the livestock losses. When I get to the numbers of that, they're staggering. And the frightening thing is the repercussions of this will be experienced for years to come. A lot of the farmers, many of them, are already financially ruined and will never be able to go back. So the farms are filing for bankruptcy, and that rose 19% last year alone, and that's the highest it's been in a decade. So... And it isn't just the rain and the floods. We have the tornadoes and the snow. And just recently in Minnesota, there was more than 20 inches of snow. Well, that's got to melt. Where's it going to go? Because Nebraska alone has 79,000 miles of waterways. Now picture that with more rain on the way. If people saw the photos of and or any of the videos of what was going on, cars were being completely swallowed up. Stop signs, I mean, the water was all the way up to the stop sign. It was wiping out roads, bridges, you name it. It's completely... I watched silos. I had never seen anything like it. I know that when water gets into a silo, even if it gets in the bottom and just the bottom part of the grain gets wet or damp, the whole thing's gone. These silos, Dave, were tipped over. I had never seen anything like it.
Was that from the extreme weather or the flooding, the winds? I mean, what led to all this destruction? I mean, what was the main culprit? What was it, the wind or was it the water?
The flood.
Yeah, that's what I thought too. Okay.
Because it, I think it was in... I'm pretty sure it was in one part of Nebraska. They were actually going down their farmland in a boat and past the silos in a little motorboat. That should give you an idea. So we've got all that coming. And I guess, I remember the number. In Nebraska alone, there are 6.4 million head of cattle, which is the second largest highest in the U.S. And when the floods, when that first set of floods came through, there were already over 1 million dead calves.
Wow.
There was 400 million in livestock, 148 million in crops. The grain loss alone was about 400 million. And the approximate loss overall was over a billion in corn and livestock, with additional economic losses expected. So the when you look at almost everything coming from farmland, and then, you know, let's talk fruits and vegetables and everything else, but grains and poultry and any kind of beef, pigs, it's a disaster coming, Dave, I'm telling you. Numbers that don't lie. In April, this was lovely. The U.S. disaster aid will not cover the crops that were drowned in in Iowa.
I saw that.
Because USDA has no mechanism to compensate any of the farmers for damaged crops in storage. Now, granted, last year they made $12 billion in aid to farmers who suffered in trade war losses without needing congressional approval. But the compensation program to cover cattle killed in natural disasters, farmers who can't plant due to weather and remove debris, they have compensation for that, but they don't have it for what they've already experienced with the floods and the storage and the rest of it. Another issue is the alfalfa and the corn and the cornfields for the cattle. Well, those flooded, but further north, when you're talking around Minnesota, there were ice chunks there. So even if the flooding were to recede at some point, the fields can rot or mold over, and so they will fail to be able to plant anything because it will not be able to take root and hold. And another issue with that was because of the storms and the flooding, they were talking about gas stations and farm shops and fuel barrels. All this stuff were knocked over and taken out. So now you've got fuel, you've got all these other issues going through the water. So this is a compounding issue all the way through the farmlands, and it's just going to absolutely devastate what we're looking at in our food supply and the length of time. So this isn't even just prepare for an earthquake, you know, in maybe a couple of weeks or if something small happens. I mean, we're talking, this is pretty monumental on, very sizable. The other thing is that farmers have to destroy any grains that are contaminated by floodwater. And one farmer was quoted as saying the flood damaged over 60,000 bushels of his grain, which was the equivalent of hundreds of thousands of dollars. So for anybody to give an idea about, there was 416,000 acres of cropland across six counties in Iowa that flooded. And now you have to factor in farms like the Dakotas and in Missouri.
What is with all that, when you're looking when you're looking at the aggregate here, when you're adding up all this damage, do we have any figures that say X amount of percent of our crop yield is affected? Have you seen anything on that at all? Because I'm having a hard time pinning it down. I've got a lot of data, but I don't have aggregate data.
Well, there's an interesting thing about that. The USDA has no plans to survey the amount of grain lost in the Midwest floods.
Oh, my God.
They have no plans. So the numbers that I'm getting, that you're getting, that we can even accumulate together, it's kind of a guessing picture, including with the videos and the photos, because the USDA has absolutely no plans to survey the amount of grain lost in the Midwest floods.
That
so millions,
scary.
Billions.
That's
which
scary.
Means not only do we not know what's going to be lost, we don't. We're left in the dark, literally. We've been hit with a source of an EMP. I mean, boom, out go the lights. We don't know. We don't know how much we've lost.
Have you read anyone that's tried to make an estimate? I have, but I just wondered if we could compare notes. Have you seen anything along those lines?
I can't say that I have. I mean, I've seen, like, snippets, but nothing. Mm-hmm. I don't think I've run across anything too consolidated.
Well, that's the rule of thumb. You're absolutely right about the snippets thing. But I've read a couple people saying, and I don't know if they're talking off the cuff. I haven't seen the hard data. See, I want to say, you know, okay, show me millions of acres plus your animal losses and what this will do to you percentage-wise, and let's add this up across all farmers. And you think this would be the first thing the government would be doing. But whenever there's a cover-up, this is what you wouldn't do. And that's why I think the government's covering up just how bad it is. But the a couple people that I have seen, one said that 40% of our crop yield for the next year is gone. Another person said it's closer to two-thirds. And there were a couple reasons they listed. One was not just due to the damage, but the two-thirds figure, they said, you've got to factor in the fact that farmers are going to have to simultaneously try to grow crops and fix and repair the damage that's been done to their property. And that's going to cut crop yield. And I thought that made a lot of sense.
That was in part some of the snippet. I didn't have so much of a number, but that there is something kind of rattling around in the back of my head that leans a little more towards the second person that you spoke of, that it would be closer to two-thirds. Even if you just look at the videos and the photos, the amount of damage that is done, and then knowing the USDA is not going to do anything, it's still hard to wrap your head around, because how can you not want to go out there and get this kind of information? But I digress. That's just the grain part of it. Now I'm going to get into the animal part with you a little bit as far as, like, the protein.
Sure.
Poultry. Well, there were several stories that popped up on this. There is a farm that is out in Michigan. It is the 13th largest in the United States, and it is the largest egg-producing ranch in Michigan. It is called Herbrook's Poultry. Well, they had a ranch fire in April of this past year, and this farm had 6 million laying hens. No birds survived the fire. When you think about not just the poultry, but the eggs on that alone. Also, last year, what started is something called it was a Newcastle disease. There were 159,000 hens lost in the latest, but there was a second aviary disease that came out. I can get that out, I promise. In California, and the total came to 269,000 that were lost. Then you've got Seaboard reports an $11 million loss on Butterball.
Let me stop you there. What's Butterball? Because you're going to lose me.
Oh, Butterball is mostly known for turkeys.
Okay, all right.
But I have seen some chicken things, but most people know them for their turkeys. They had an $11 million loss. Sanderson Farms, which I'm still kind of on the fence about how organic they really are, but we'll say they're organic because they say they are. Their net loss was $43.2 million in the fourth quarter, and it had to do with cost and inefficiencies, but that was the result of two hurricanes that came in, which were Florence and Michael, during the fourth quarter. So there were a lot of issues on going through there with their farms. Let's not forget, out in Nebraska, we have Tyson.
Yes.
Tyson not only recalled 12 million packages of chicken because they had metal fragments in it, there was an employee that sabotaged the chicken houses twice and not only turned the heaters on and the fans off, they started a fire. And this went on in February and March, and they lost 22,000 birds. So the numbers are growing exponentially in our poultry division. But let's not leave them or the cows out. Let's get to pigs. 150 to 200 million pigs were hit by a global plague called ASF, which is the African swine flu. This is the greatest threat to the food production. Disease is now spread to every province in mainland China. There is no cure. There is no vaccine. There is nothing that you can do for these pigs. They just
okay. But explain to me though. Okay, how's this a threat to humans? Does it jump species, or do you eat contaminated food if you eat parts of the pig? What's the danger to us?
Well, they. Let's see, where did it go? I'm sorry, you jumped a little bit ahead of me on that one.
That's okay.
As far as I know it has made people sick. It hasn't hit the U.S. yet, but I know that the... Where is it? You're going to have to give me a second. I'm going to have to backtrack on my note there.
We'll come back to that question, okay? So let me take you back to where you were at with the pig infestation and damage to the pig supply. And I'm well aware of that. Let's continue with that.
Okay. To put it in perspective, that's more pigs than the U.S. pork industry produces in an entire year. So... The production of what is going on with the pigs over in China, it's like the top market. It combine us with Canada, and they still have more pigs than we do. It is the equivalent of the U.S. pork industry that has just been wiped out. The ASF has also spread to Cambodia, Tibet, Romania, South Africa, and Vietnam. That was it. The decrease of pigs in China is roughly the equivalent of what Canada and the U.S. produce combined. This loss for them is the equivalent of 25 to 35% of pork production, which is completely unprecedented. So we're talking about an absolute crippling blow to the global food supply. Thankfully, it hasn't hit us yet. The mortality rate is as high as 100% within 2 to 10 days. There's no vaccine, no cure, and it will take 5 to 7 years to recover from. I haven't seen the complete report on what exactly happens to a human being, but I know that, and I don't know all the repercussions of what this disease does, but it's 100% mortality rate on the pig.
Yeah, well, let me share a possible connecting dot here. And something we haven't talked about, folks. So you're getting this in real time from real research. I did some research some time back, and I'm going to say going back 2 or 3 months, and the deer and elk population in northern Colorado was greatly affected, and someone had consumed meat from an elk and died of mad cow disease. And it was linked directly to this. And as I looked into it deeper, Alexander, I found that 26 states have this infestation. And what it really prevents people from doing in rural areas, in these areas that have the infestation, is if you had a food shortage, like the one that we've laid out here in the beginning of the show, and it's coming, that some people will compensate by going out and hunting deer and elk. Well, that could be a fatal experience. So subsequently,
absolutely,
this is taking away another escape route from people who could get away from this devastation that we've had with our weather and our farm situation. And I'm not, boy, you know, I don't have the proof, but I'm going to tell you where my silly tinfoil hat conspiratorial mind goes, that the infestation in America is implanted, and it was implanted in China. And there's a common theme, because I will tell you this. I have seen slow motion, or what I should say, rapid speed photography, radar, of the jet stream during the latest storms in the Midwest. And I don't know if you've covered this part of it or not, but this weather that hit the Midwest was artificially created through weather modification by moving the ionosphere, the jet stream. And people say, oh, they can't do that. Well, if you go to my website, thecommonsenseshow.com, and you put in Air Force owning the weather 2025, you will see all the patents, 76 of them in all, that talk about weather modification and also the ability to use electromagnetics to stimulate earthquakes along fault lines. And people are going, oh my God, I'm rolling my eyes. Look, I'm just telling you what the patents say, and it's a production of a document that was leaked out of the Air Force. Do you think there's a link with all this? When you've done this research, do you think that we're reaching here, or is there a link?
Oh, no, absolutely. There's a link. I have seen footage and radar footage, and with the, and this is a beautiful part about technology. We'll kind of jump aside for that for a second, but this is one of the beautiful things about technology is, you know, we can see what they're doing. We can see what the weather is actually doing. And in some of these videos and some of these, some of the things that have been sent to me, as these radar patterns are going along and you're going to see the weather going across, suddenly you will see these electronic, they just kind of shoot out and they go straight across the map in whatever direction. You can see it directing the weather. You can see it directing different patterns to either hold it, speed it up, slow it down, change whatever they want to. It's all out there. All you have to do is look. So it's not a tinfoil hat thing whatsoever. You can go to geoengineering. You can look at Dane Calloway. You can look at Dane Wigington.
Yes.
You can. There are several people out there that we'll talk about. And this isn't even just about the chemtrails or the rest of this. This is when you get into things like HARP or the weather patterns or the patents that the U.S. Air Force has, and when you start getting into that, you know, or, gee, let's talk Fukushima.
Yeah, let's go there.
That actually goes into the weather pattern as well. And that's actually going to tie into exactly more food supply and the rest of it. But I do agree with you 100% that what you're saying is right, and that people should go to your site and please, please, please look it up, because you'll learn a lot.
I gotta interrupt here for a second. I really apologize, but
missed our
bottom of the hour break here real quick. So let me just do this impromptu here. We're listening to Alexander Daly, and I can't tell you people how important this report is, because it should motivate you to get prepared. But anyway, I have to acknowledge our sponsors for the last half of this segment. One of the good people at Noble Gold with their IRA. Listen to me. There is no substitute for this kind of investment. People are just taking off with great success, and I really hope that you'll follow suit, because the dollar is going to collapse someday. $22 trillion in debt. The Pentagon absconded with $21 trillion, and they tell you to shut up and go away. It's none of your business. We can't absorb that and remain a solvent currency. So you need to put your money where it lasts, and that's the 6,000-year history of gold. The Noble Gold IRA, you can talk to a representative for a no-pressure interview. Make sure you use my name, Dave Hodges, and you can call them at 877-646-5347 or go to noblegoldinvestments.com. That's noblegoldinvestments.com or 877-646-5347. We're also brought to you by Health Masters, and you've heard me talk about them often. I credit them with helping me avoid four surgeries over the last several years. You can too, but it's also good for maintenance. Go to healthmasters.com and use the coupon code CODE5, that's C-O-D-E 5 for 5% off. And then finally, what we're talking about here, preparewithdave.com, the best in storable food. It's the best deal in America. Go to the website, check it out, and you're going to see the great sale and the great quality and the great variety, preparewithdave.com. Back to Alexandra, as we were talking about just getting started with Fukushima, and I agree with you. Fukushima is an overlay for what's going on with food across the planet. So let's pick it up there.
Well, part of the reason this whole thing stemmed back with me to do like a bigger picture and talk to you about it was I ran into this article a while ago, and I was remembering all the mass animal die-offs that have been going on since then, since Fukushima happened. And this one just kind of sparked me because of what happened with all the floods, and I thought, you know what? I think people need to realize what the whole big picture is. And I don't think that you can paint it accurately without bringing all this into play. So if our land food supply wasn't enough to go after, you know, now we have the sea life and a different direction.
Exactly.
And the article
that,
I had to do with...
That's food supply, too. That is also food supply. Let's not minimize that. It's a big deal.
Oh, it absolutely is. But a lot of times we don't, you know, we don't necessarily, we usually think one or the other. But when you see what the big implication is, where I'm going with this, when I get to the Fukushima part of this, it, I think, is the capstone of why a lot of this is happening, as far as the animal die-offs, as far as the rest of it, not the flooding and the weather and the, but starting over there and then working through our oceans and working through that food chain, and the radiation being brought over is going to affect the people and the animals. But it started with the gray whale starving to death in the Pacific. And the scientist, and I love this, and the scientists want to know why. You want
to
know why?
I'd like
I think
why.
You know why.
Tell me why.
You're sitting there watching them, you know, being decimated, and we want to know why. You know what? If I know why, you know why. But basically, back in 2013, there was an article written about Fukushima aftermath. 98% of the Pacific Ocean floor was covered by dead sea creatures. Now, if you know that number, then you can't tell me you don't know what's going on in the ocean.
Sure.
And that was 2 years after this happened.
Absolutely.
So they had decomposing sea creatures in 2012. Now, I remember getting all kinds of information and seeing the pictures, because I live on the West Coast. I live in California, down south, but I live in California. And I was getting pictures of from the northern part of it, and the sea stars are melting, literally melting. It was one of the most disgusting things I'd ever seen in my life. They had Humboldt squid that were being washed up. They had sea lions dying in vast numbers, and they were coming up with all kinds of sores and oh my God, the health problems, everything. But here we go. Then we have an article that, well, why haven't we heard anything about it? Well, let's see. This is 2013. Japan to ban all news coverage of Fukushima with a 10-year prison penalty if you talk about it.
That's like New Zealand and the mosque. I mean, whenever government wants to cover something up, you just hit it, Alexandra. Very good.
Absolutely. And all the cores are still going on, and they don't know when it's going to be, they're going to do anything about it, and they don't know when they're going to be able to do it. In 2014, the tests were showing the Fukushima fish were up to 124 times above the safe radiation level. That was 2014. Then you've got the University of Alaska scientists find that Fukushima radiation was making the sick seals. So now in 2014, we're talking that it's all the way up in Alaska. So it's already moved up there. The other thing is that American sailors that were on the USS Reagan got really sick after just having snowball fights with radioactive snow that was blowing off the coast of Fukushima. So these people were getting cancer and dying. Then, of course, we have our government, who doesn't like to talk about things. So there was actually an MSNBC host was warned to was told not to warn the public about Fukushima, because the official government position was that it was safe. And what they do is they keep anybody who comes over, and we're taking, oh crap, the word went right out of my head, when they're going out there with the radiation, the handheld radiation meters. Well, what the government's been doing is changing all the numbers, so, oh, but this is safe, and this is safe, and this is safe, but none of it is safe. So another fact was that 44% of the children, sorry, 44% of the children in Fukushima have thyroid problems. And even when they sent a robot to go inspect a reactor's containment vessel at the Fukushima Daiichi nuclear power plant, the robot stopped responding under 3 hours of operation, trying to get into the power plant.
Sure.
And basically, back in 2015, the official data, Fukushima slammed the West Coast was 790 times the normal radiation. So Fukushima radiation is not only out of control, it is putting the word danger in life as we know it. 300 tons of radioactive groundwater is leaking into the Pacific every single day. Now, that was back in 2014. 300 tons of radiated water a day. So to say that our water is poisoned, then we come back to what's happened over here. When you've got that kind of radiation and it's getting into the sand, it's getting into the water, it's getting into all of our sea life, it's getting in to the predators that would eat that continued food chain. So now all these animals are getting radiated and God only knows what else. So along with the diseases and the infections and God knows what else they're doing to the animals that we would eat, and thus where you're coming from as far as, you know, narrowing our choices down, this is like we're in one giant supermarket where they keep taking our food away and they keep taking our choices away. And if that isn't bad enough, our bottom line is, so when we not only have the food, now we're coming to water, just our water. And you and I have talked about that a couple times. There is a new report that comes out, and it was this month, a couple days ago. It confirms toxic water in 43 states. So now we're exposing millions to more dangerous chemicals in our drinking water. So I cannot say this enough to all of your listeners. For anybody who listens to you for the first time, the 500th time, 1,000th time, you people need to prepare. Please listen to this man. He knows what he's talking about.
Alexander, the thing that's really concerning me, too, is also what we saw with the Gulf oil spill. The Corexit's really had a debilitating effect on people's health, and it's far enough out from the accident now, or conspiracy, whatever you think it was, to measure the health effects. Corexit got into the transpiration cycle. In other words, it was part of the weather pattern. And there were news items that ran on TV news stations as far away from the Gulf as Memphis. They later scrubbed the story off the internet because they weren't basically telling what the establishment wanted people to hear. But here's the Fukushima situation. We're now 8 years into it. It's clearly in the transpiration cycle. We're bathed in radiation all over the planet. The rainfall comes to Earth that's irradiated. When Obama first responded to Fukushima, he had the federal minions up the radiation danger level by 1,000%, and a month later they stopped measuring altogether. That tells you he knew right then how bad this was and didn't want to alert the public. Have you found anything that addresses this transpiration cycle phenomena that clearly Fukushima would be involved in by now and has been for several years?
Well, I've been looking into a lot of it. I do know that things like, as far as what you're talking about, the radiation, where they either keep changing the numbers or basically everything's safe, what they can pinpoint that back to, just south of San Francisco, they were on a beach taking the same radiation meter, and they said 30 was normal. And this alert meter went to 292, and that was back in 2014. As far as... I'm sorry, pinpoint the question a little better for me, because I think I might be misunderstanding what you're asking me.
Well, what I'm saying is the radiation's in the weather cycle, and that clearly It would be showing up in our groundwater, the contaminated groundwater, our fresh water supplies. It'd be showing up in our food, and it'd be showing up in us. And, you know, because cancer is an evolving illness, leukemia is an evolving illness, we may not be far enough out right now to establish the rates and correlate them to Fukushima as a starting point. But you got to know it's there. But the weather phenomena is definitely there. Have you come across anything that says, hey, it's not just in the Pacific, it's in the air, it's in our food, it's in our water, and it's in us? Have you found that at all?
Absolutely. Actually, Dane Wigington was another one that covered this. There have been some other people that have talked about what is up in our weather being sprayed, both
sure.
here and, what is it, the upper ionosphere? I'm not good with the space thing, sorry.
That's all right. No, you're right, though. It would be in the weather. It would be transported on the jet stream. It'd be in the ionosphere. I mean, this is the part of the transpiration cycle. But also, see, when this water, you know, just lay out a quick lesson here from hydrology and geology. When the when the radiation's on the water and in the water, you have evaporation, and that evaporation ends up coming back to Earth somewhere else in the form of moisture, whether it's snowfall somewhere in the northern latitudes or it's rainfall. But clearly, the radiation is being transported by the radiation cycle created by Fukushima into the weather cycle, and it's been going on for years. And what amazes me is this is just basic weather 101, and you don't hear a damn word about this in the mainstream media.
Oh, no. They do not want to talk about that. The Great Culling has started quite some time ago, one way or another, and what better way to kill you off than hit you from the earth, the sea, the sky, you know, and they even do it through the fires. There was a satellite photo, Dave, when you asked me about the radar thing and about how they direct weather. Ironically enough, there was a snapshot of a satellite video that was over Paradise, California, and there was a plume of smoke that came up, and literally, you could see the explosion. It was right over Paradise. It was right when the fire happened. There was nothing around it, and I mean, it comes more and more and more. And when they start spraying all this stuff around us, it's in our trees, it's on everything. So when you're talking aluminum, barium, and a lot of these other products that are already inundating us, and they're highly flammable, so it's affecting the plant life. We breathe it in. So the cancer alone is accelerated, because up until Fukushima happened, we weren't seeing anything like this. I mean, we had the chemtrails, we had this, we had that. But even back in 2014, they were saying that in the soil alone, long-term public exposure radiation can be as high as 2,000 millirems. That means instead of 1 in 10,000 chance of getting cancer, it's now 1 in 23 over a 30-year period. And that was just from being in the soil.
Wow. That's staggering. Is the supply of radiation from the present condition, is it still ongoing? Are we waiting for the radiation to die down? Is it still being released? I mean, what's the status now of the ongoing crisis?
Well, we're still in the same boat. They will not allow anyone to talk about it. The Japanese shut everything down. They will not let anybody talk about it. And those core reactors are still blowing radioactive waste day in, day out, and have been since it happened. Nothing has changed. Nothing has changed. So now what? That was 2011, so we're 8 years into this. And a lot of the facts I gave you started 2 years after. I don't know. You tell me. If we're 8 years into this, and the facts that I read you were mostly 2, 3, maybe 4 years in, and we're 8 years in, that's an awful lot of radiation.
Yeah, it certainly
And they don't
is.
Want to talk about it. And it's going global, so of course our sea life is dying.
But it's not just our sea life and our seafood. As I said, if it's transpirational,
absolutely.
It comes inland and dumps on our crops.
Yeah.
And
absolutely.
Color me ignorant. And maybe I haven't come across it. I've looked. I want to see the studies that show crop radiation yield pre-Fukushima and compared to today. And I bet you haven't come across it. I haven't come across it. And to me, it's irresponsible of our federal government, particularly the EPA and the CDC, to not investigate this. They're equipped to investigate, but I'm sure they haven't. You haven't seen anything like this, have you?
No, not a peep. I'm guessing that they're taking the same stance as the USDA with the wiped out grain. We're not going to go look. Or if they do, they've got it locked up somewhere. Because it's like Orville Dam. That's ready to go. They're sure as hell not going to tell anybody.
Yeah, Paul Preston has been trying to get a hold of me today, and he said it's big news about Oroville. So that's not going to go away either. And you want to talk about crop yield? Here we go, folks. If you've read my articles on thecommonsenseshow.com, you've heard this already. But if that dam goes, and setting aside the horrendous and tragic loss of life, which could be over a million people, crop yield for the largest agricultural producing area in the United States, gone. And not only does it affect agriculture and would make us an instant importing nation by need, not by preference, then we would also see retail come to a standstill because they wouldn't be able to cross the Central Valley into the rest of the United States. And as a consequence, 30% to 40% of our retail would be affected. So when we look at this, this is a catastrophe of epic proportions with dramatic influence on our food supply. And given what I know about the direction that this is going, and you've talked about Fukushima, I have a hard time believing it's not going to happen.
I would like to sit here and have a discussion stating I disagree with you, but unfortunately I can't say that, Dave, because I'm gravely concerned about the condition of that dam and the repercussions of it. Because they have it. I've heard you interview Paul, and I've, you know, kind of tried to stay on top of this, and I did see some other photos. And they spent, what, $1.1 billion on trying to fix this thing, and yet this is what they've come up with. I mean, that's not even the little Dutch boy standing there with his finger in there. There's too many holes in it. And they don't want to. We know what Jerry Brown wanted to do about taking the dams out, and I can't remember the other guy that he hired to help take them all out. But these people have lost their ever-loving minds, and they are pulling everything out and throwing the kitchen sink at us, one way or another. Through drugs, through disease, through flooding, through natural disasters, through you name it. I won't even get into all the weird laws.
Oh, I know. Excuse me, like in Colorado, it was a law for years until the people rose up that you could not collect rainwater and you couldn't reuse irrigation water for farms, which has a direct impact on crop yield. And Colorado's becoming quickly the leader in Agenda 21, now Agenda 2030. So it's everywhere. And see, ultimately what this breaks down to is what I've written about before, that I'm thinking the best way to express is food is going to be used as a weapon. Stalin used it. Hitler used it. Mao used it. It's happening in Venezuela right now, and I believe the beginning stages have happened here. Any final thoughts, Alexandra, on your presentation, which really was very, very detailed, and where this is going?
What I see is, with this going on, I see an acceleration. If you started looking a couple of years ago and noticing all the stuff that, the choice is dwindling and kind of being corralled into smaller choices. And now, with these things happening, you're going from very little to probably minuscule, if any, choices. A lot of the repercussions over this, we're talking, one said 5 to 7 years?
Mm-hmm.
A lot of these, you know, and it could be even longer because a lot of these farmers aren't going to be able to recover from it. So there goes our farmland. There goes our product. You talk about the dominoes falling. And this is straight across the board. This isn't one animal. Now we're talking beef. Now we're talking poultry. Now we're talking pigs. So there. And people wonder why they've been sitting here, the government and these weird people have been pushing things like cockroach milk and maggot burger. I don't know. Did they know? My guess is probably yes. I can't stress it enough. What you do and what you say is so important for these people to hear. People, please, even if it's one thing at a time, get out there and start getting something, because you're either not going to be able to get it or not be able to afford it, because the prices are going to go up and it's going to get crazy and insane if you can even get the food at all.
That's
crazy. It's going to get bad.
It's crazy. Look, we're out of time. We're up against it. I really appreciate you joining us, Alexandra. Good stuff. We'll talk to you again. To everybody else, stay tuned. We'll be back with more after these messages.